Kaboom! We're back with another All Out Cricket Pod Blast.
Pod Blast.
Alex, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Very excited. Are you wearing a wonderful jumper, which we've already been commenting on off air?
Apparently it's both warm looking but also bobbly. So thanks, lads.
No worries.
With us, we've got Henry.
Hello!
Hey, and Ed.
Hi.
Hey. It's going to be one of those shows, isn't it? It's almost festive, isn't it? Just one day away from festive.
Yes, so you've not bought anything before December? You've
absolutely
held the line?
Absolutely not. I've held the line.
At the month break.
I'm not even looking at anything Christmassy until tomorrow, Alex. Is that a policy that you hold as well?
It's been noted by the High Street. The downturn has been notable. That kind of discipline, Ross, is exactly what I'd expect.
It's been Downturn Abbey. OK, let's get in on those puns and let's talk the ODI series. It would be remiss of us to start talking about the ODI series starting anywhere else than talking about a very particular butler, a butler that only seems to serve up feast or famine.
Mm. He's been busy while he's been away, hasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
But only the seventh take as well.
Exactly, yeah. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes. To perfect that sort of thing, listener, did you watch that innings? It was absolutely incredible.
Astonishing.
It was one of those innings that you're very, very lucky to have witnessed. I think, you know, they just change your whole perception of a player. We knew he could do that, but you're beginning to wonder whether actually he was going to be capable of doing it again in the near future, and it was remarkable.
And particularly, we've kind of seen him do ridiculous things before, but the kind of reaction to this one, having been in such bad form, we've never seen him really, like, jump around like that, smile, shout. Because, you know, obviously famously kind of quiet sort of a bloke. But, amazing innings. The one particularly where he played the kind of reverse sweep off the seamer without moving a muscle in either of his legs. Mm. Just typically it, weird
kind
and
of
wonderful.
The Ian Duncan Smith of the England batting lineup. The quiet man is turning up the volume.
That's right, yeah. I believe that was his team talk as vice captain. And the game he captained, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I was really impressed that they looked so up for it, the England players on the balcony. It almost had so much crowd participation. It was like the Rocky Horror Show. It was shouting. I think I saw someone throw something. Root donned some stockings and suspenders, I'm pretty sure. It was incredible out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't see any of it, but I heard about it.
You heard it was good.
And I heard it was exciting.
Well, it's that level of participation from the cricket-loving public that we've come to know.
I honestly, just slightly more seriously, I do think that Josh Butler might possibly be the most talented, just in terms of hand-eye coordination, of possibly any England player ever.
That began to sound like he was going to be a really huge statement, and then you slightly backed away from it. And Josh Butler might be the best kind of out of hand-eye coordination at the moment.
In terms of just hand-eye coordination.
My neck is not going near any kind of line here.
I think he is absolutely incredible. The shots he plays, commentators pause because they don't know really what to say. And every so often they get it wrong. They go, well, he's in the end, he's had to improvise and slog it. No, he hasn't. That's what he does. That's every shot, essentially. It's completely not orthodox in many ways, but it's completely brilliant.
How do you do a makes no mistake with Josh Butler? No wonder they're stunned into silence. As Josh Butler ramps something for six. Josh Butler makes no mistake with your reverse ramp of a seamer.
That's just meat and drink to him there, I'm afraid.
Listener, you may notice during the course of this episode that we're going to try a couple of things. We're always inspired by American podcasts, NFL Now, etc.
You are.
So we're going to try and go for a few more hard-hitting sound bites.
Okay.
Now, Ed had a bit of a go earlier, but you kind of were a bit English about it.
I wasn't pithy enough. Needs to be more bombastic.
Say, Josh Butler is the craziest batsman ever.
Mm. That's good.
But he's also a failure.
That's good. That's okay. Good.
And then just let it drop. Just there it is.
Mm.
Well done.
How crazy are we allowed to go with this? Because I've got a couple of crazy sound bites up my sleeve, which every so often I just throw out there.
Say it.
Mitchell Johnson's retired before anyone finds out he was on steroids.
There we go.
Can we say that?
No. Allegedly.
Was it supposed to be libelous?
That's the... No. When I said soundbite, I didn't mean defamatory.
Look, I've made it up. It's got no basis in reality.
Should we have a short pause? We'll speak to our lawyers, and then we'll come back and review the rest of England's historic win down... I was about to say down in the way it is south...
Yeah, is south of here?
Yeah,
south down south.
Down
where
south.
Can we find a lawyer?
Down south in Dubai.
Lovely.
Let's talk about the rest of the series. I've written on this yellow post-it, Rhys Topley.
Very good.
Does anyone want to talk about Rhys Topley? Henry, you do.
Can I for a second? And this is my attempt at a soundbite. Rhys Topley comes from Ipswich. No, I've got it wrong, haven't I?
No, I've got the idea wrong. Yeah, it's usually
you need to say
more.
Something bold.
He's the tallest man ever.
But not when he plays next to a fan already.
No, exactly, he's blown out the water.
How's about intriguing soundbite? Rhys Topley is the second best left-arm fast bowler in Ipswich.
Ooh.
And then people are like, Who's the best? Now, if there was somebody that was better that I could throw in, someone kind of obscure, something like that, somebody from 10 years ago,
then that would be ideal. That would be good, wouldn't it?
See, okay. I bring up Ipswich because it's my hometown, and I don't think, and I'm sure someone will be able to prove me wrong, I can't think of any international cricketers who have hailed from there before, certainly in recent years.
Gotta tell you what, they'll be tweeting in on that one.
So I'm a big Topley fan.
Yeah.
I smell a prize. How's about a free subscription?
Digi sub.
For the listener who can tweet in whether there's ever been an international cricketer from Ipswich. Ed, what do you think about Rhys Topley?
I think he's got so much to like, hasn't he? He's tall, rangy, left arm, and a proper tail ender as well to boot. So it's really great to see.
As a short, squat man, I'm not sure that saying somebody's tall and rangy is positive character.
Okay. He's a quick bowler, though, isn't he?
He's a quick bowler. He's quick, I like that.
So he needs to be tall and rangy, really.
He's done very well in an inexperienced bowling lineup.
And he's a very clever bowler, the most clever bowler that England have had in limited overs cricket in the last 5 years.
Soundbite.
Hello.
The last 5 years really nailed it for me. But he's quite savvy. He's a big beast of a man. He is quite quick, but I don't think his pace is actually his key asset. He seems to be a very, very savvy bowler, one that's very difficult to get away.
What do we think about the Pakistan ODI side? Aren't they awful? I seem to recall from the World Cup they're awful. So we beat them, but they're awful. Is that a fair summation?
There have been some interesting selections in this squad in this series, and it's hard to believe that it represents the very cream of the talent available in Pakistan. So England have not beaten a brilliant side here by any stretch of the imagination. There have been a lot of occasions where maybe top order wickets, which are so crucial in T20 cricket, have come a little easier than they might do elsewhere when they do get to the World T20. But maybe it's what they need to give them that bit of confidence and kind of, you know, give those younger players a good grounding and give them the kind of platform they need to then go on and have the confidence in pressure situations come the World T20. But Pakistan themselves have been a bit, they've been quite Pakistani.
Yeah, you can only beat what's put in front of you, though.
That's exactly right. That's kind of a Harry Redknapp quote, that is.
Whatever.
I thought Little Man was tripping.
I think your response there, Ed, was a little bit like the angel on the shoulder of an England cricketer when asked the question of, well, how good were the opposition today? And you go, well, yeah, some wickets came easier than you would have liked. The devil's thinking they were rubbish, weren't they? That Imran Khan, the left armour, he was rubbish. Yeah. And is it, I can't remember, the bearded opener, 39-year-old. I'm not sure he's played before.
And Mohammed Hafeez has run out, I think, 9 men in the series in total. So,
to the Australians after the 1993 Ashes game, you know, pleased to have won and all that. But, you know, England were really, really bad. No, they didn't. They lauded it over us. Like, they just sort of conquered the West Indian side of the 80s. It was Mark Lathwell. It's a truly English thing, this, isn't it? To sort of go, well, you know, reasons to be grumpy.
Mm. Well, no, but make no mistake, there are loads and loads of reasons to be like really, really cheerful and encouraged. It's just keeping it in perspective, isn't it? You know,
absolutely.
I've got a few here. James tailor-made for a place in the England middle order in all formats.
I say.
That's a soundbite, isn't it?
Yeah, James Taylor is the best short man to play for England in the last 50 years.
That's good. That's good. That's very good.
Hey, no, real one. James Taylor is the best player of spin England have produced since Graham Thorpe.
That's actually substantive. Can you tell us why? And also how? Why is James Taylor good at playing spin?
And how?
Can you tell me how? I think he's worked out his strategy, Alex. That's what I'd say.
That's good.
He actually did a very, very good performance piece with All Out Cricket magazine about how to play the spinners. He has a very clear game plan. He wants to come down the wicket. He wants to play straight. If it's not there, he's small. He sweep. Lovely. And he's really good at it.
Yeah, and he jumps back onto the back foot. And then when he does skip down, he sometimes play a drive for six on one foot, sometimes on no feet. No, that's true. jump into the shot. It's really weird to watch, but compellingly so.
Yeah.
He's a terrific guy. He's just a winner. I've said this many, many times before. James Taylor is just a winner. And you look at him, and he plays with determination more than his bat.
Can I do... That's great. Can I do the obligatory cliche, which is, you know, England are doing well in the ODIs. Captain Morgan is, you know, doing well in the ODIs. And, you know, when Captain Morgan plays well, they tend to play well. I literally almost fell asleep halfway through saying that. It was so boring. I don't know how many other people have said it as well. But, you know, when Morgan plays well, England play well.
It's not untrue.
It's not untrue.
I would say he's a funny player, Owen Morgan. Mm. Just quickly, when he looks good, you think, how can he not be in this Test team? He's such a quality cricketer. And then every now and then, he's got out twice, once in the one day, once in the T20s, being bowled by Shoaib Malik, where it looks like he's just picked up a bat for the first time. And you don't understand how those two people can inhabit the same body because he doesn't know how to do it. And then obviously sometimes he's incredible.
Just before we wrap this section up, can somebody try and tie this win or loss into some kind of narrative to do with the England ODI side? What's happening?
Well, I might be able to do that. What I want to say first is I've got one pun on here which I haven't used yet. And it is. Weren't the ODIs a classy vehicle for Jason Rolls-Royce's first One Day 100?
I think that says it all.
That says it all, doesn't it?
Well, this is wheeling out, you know, just because Butler scored that wonderful century, we shouldn't lose sight of Jason Roy's century, obviously, too, which in its own way. Was Hales good enough to... we'll come on to England, South Africa. Anything he did in the ODIs actually make his case in South Africa any stronger?
Scored 100, didn't he, Al?
Yep. So does that does
it? I think the 100.
No, in truth, the 100 did save him somewhat, and it saved the whole of the England setup in some ways because he's going to be the next man in. It's pretty much sewn up now. And we needed something to cheer about from him. If not consistency, then at least a glimmer of hope to remind us of his talent.
Good. OK, what a wonderful summation. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to go live into the T20 analysis, because as we speak, as this is being recorded, England are actually playing Pakistan in the third dead rubber T20. But a little bit on that, and then maybe something on the test squad. Jazz.
T20, it's surely been the best T20 series ever, isn't it?
There's a World Cup at some point next year, is that right? Pakistan, ranked number two in the world at T20. So not like the ODI series, kind of a proper challenge, a way of... No? What? You look sceptical, Henry.
I am sceptical. I don't think... I think it's, again, important because we're playing in the UAE, so not favourable conditions to England. But again, they were not very good, are not very good, as we say, we're in the middle of the third T20. They've looked pretty poor in that as well, not least because their fielding is lamentable.
Well, there's some suggestion that they're eating too much. Anyone buying the Pakistan players in T20 eating too much... theory that's going around.
Just in T20?
I don't understand this.
How do they do that?
All the formats they do badly in.
Yeah.
All the formats they're losing in, they're eating too much.
Well, it's a strange thought, but it does seem like they're very different teams in each format. I mean, for one, in the test, they've held together, I think, with sticky tape, but mostly by Yunis Khan and Misbah Ul-Haq. Certainly they're batting. And they're still excellent batsmen and still got a lot to offer. At 50 over, they seem fairly lacklustre. T20, they've got this terrific record, certainly. Being second in the world is nothing to sniff at. They do seem like very different teams, whichever side you look at them from.
And some of them are overeating.
Are you going to point fingers?
Yeah.
No, I don't know who to point fingers at.
Where have you got this from?
It's kind of just quotes. It was, who does the Pak Passion blog?
Saad Shadiq.
Right, so I was on his Twitter and he was quoting a member of the management, I think, saying that the players were a bit too fond of a bargain bucket.
Mm.
It may not have been his exact words, but it was something in that region, which I thought was interesting.
Well, they are sponsored by Lay's, the crisp people. Maybe there's just too many freebies.
Yeah. Well, what do they expect?
Yeah, but there again, England is sponsored by Waitrose. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's plenty of quinoa on offer down there, and apparently that's exactly what they need.
I had a quinoa salad for lunch. Can I tell you, by 2:30 p.m. I had to have another meal. I don't understand how England players do it.
They had some really nice things on that menu. It's often overlooked. There's lots of like lovely pizzas on that menu.
I'm not saying they weren't delicious, just were they filling enough? I'm worried the England players are underfed, and I think we should be looking into that as an explanation for their test performances.
There you go, waitress. We giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other with our comments, much like yourselves.
Can I talk about Sam Billings?
Go on. Yeah, like you
just
should.
To say that I thought he was really unlucky not to hold down the ODI place over the English summer, or even be playing the ODI fixtures, and he came in the T20 and demonstrated almost immediately what we were missing. He's awesome.
He is awesome, isn't he? Yeah. You said the other day in the office he's the most De Villiers-like of the new crop of English players.
Yeah, that is my soundbite. That is my soundbite, and thank you for delivering it so punchily. Yeah,
that's good.
No, that's right. He really does have a hint about that, and obviously that is like as high praise as it possibly gets. But he does create these shapes and play these shots, which are truly more than 360 degrees around the wicket.
Yeah, opportunity for James Vince in the T20 series. We're in the third one, which is live, did I mention, listener?
He's
clawed England to a defendable total. We'll have to find out whether that happens or not. You can use the internet to look that up.
The what? So, in your own time, though, not on your work clock.
The electronic internet. So that's James Vince. What do people think about Vincey?
Hasn't failed so far. He must have an average of about 37 or 8. Excellent at T20 level. I think Vince could be a really, really valuable asset. He looked like he might be good. He's come in. He's got 100% record for being quite good. I'll take that.
I like players like Vince, to a certain degree, James Taylor. Vince, because he's got some leadership duties as well. You feel like you get a bit more from somebody like Vince when you bring him in, a bit like James Taylor, with the leadership qualities too. With the leadership qualities. Yes.
Well, he did show good leadership today, didn't he, in holding the innings together when others around him fell.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting player, not least because he plays proper cricket shots, as he's always told, and he plays them beautifully. But this series against Pakistan, the highest run scorer by an Englishman, most amount of runs scored by an Englishman in a bilateral T20 series. So no one scored more than old Vincey boy.
That's very good.
Which is, you know, very, very impressive. And it gives England a nice problem to have about the makeup of that top six, because they don't know who's going to be in that come the World T20, and we don't know where the fixtures are going to be either. That's another issue.
That's good stuff. Okay, so there's one more T20 player I want to talk about.
Yes.
But I'm just going to say the name, and I'm going to say it with the frustration born of the injustices done to him. A man described by Mike Brearley as being like the gamesman in Lady Chatterley's Lover. And that's Plunkett.
People are rightly quite confused about what's happened.
I'm very, very confused about Plunkett.
As are Yorkshire. I mean, people have been quite honest about this. I don't think there is a single person in cricket, aside from the England selectors, who are not a little bit puzzled by what's happened to him. And he's been so unlucky.
A sign of the man that upon being dropped for England, South Africa, and I'm choking up here, he immediately pulled it out of the bag in the T20s. That's the kind of guy he is.
It's the kind of guy he is, but he's played well in almost every game, as far as I'm aware, since he's come back into the side. In Plunkett Mark 2, Plunkett 2.0, he's always been very good. If you took his averages and just applied them to his resurrection, I think he'd be pretty undroppable in most formats.
I'd like not to just be contrary, but I am going to be slightly contrary.
Please do.
I think, with the exception of Chris Jordan, I think it's right that Chris Wokes and Mark Footit were selected ahead of him for the South Africa tour. I don't think he's that clever with the ball. He's very fast. But if Wood's going to come back and do that job, Plunkett's role becomes less important. I know he's been really impressive in these T20s, but I've never thought of him, and I think a lot of people haven't really thought of him as a one-day bowler. He's never had great control. So I think it's sad that they've gone for Jordan, because they've had him in the UAE and he's been carrying drinks. But I think he is beneath Footit and Wokes and Wood when he comes back, and Finn.
Well, we've sort of wandered into the test squad, and it's entirely my fault.
But yes.
We would have some jazz, but just to close off Plunkett...
Should we just segue? I'll do it now. Segue.
Okay.
There we go.
Is the Plunkett situation that Wokes and Jordan are there in case Stokes gets injured because they think they've got Broad and Anderson? Like, Plunkett can really bat. Okay, so we know... I think Plunkett can bat at 8 in the test team.
Yeah, I don't think... I can't believe that Jordan's batting has been preferred to Plunkett's, because I don't think there's a particular difference there. It's not even, I wouldn't say, a clean-cut case that Jordan is a better bat than Plunkett. So they must believe that he's a better man to have as a reserve bowler, possibly reserve fielder, in the squad. which I think is a bit tough. I think I do agree with Henry. I understand why Foot it's in there as a left armer, and why Wokes comes in as like the preferred seamer of those other than Broad and Anderson.
But that's the bit I don't get. Where does that Wokes bit come from?
Well, I think he was in that position and then got injured, and now he's fit again. They want him back in that position in the pecking order. Is that?
Yeah. Well, he was playing in 2014, finished the test series against India with wickets.
Yeah.
And then got injured.
Yeah, but him and Jordan were backing up Anderson and Broad at the end of that India series. They were only in because Plunkett got injured. Like, if you work it back far enough, all roads
if you
lead
back,
back to
then
Plunkett.
Side bottoms back to the
team. Get John Snow in there. Yeah.
So, well, I agree with you. I have to say, I think the sad thing should have been Chris Wokes not getting back in the team. That's what I think.
No.
I mean, I like Wokes very much, but I do, you know, it's as threatening as a teddy bear throwing a jam sandwich.
You've really upset Henry now. You've really upset him.
I just strongly disagree.
Do you? No, do tell. Do persuade me.
I think I remember saying this on the podcast before. I think Chris Wokes is a terrific cricketer. Mm. I think he will replace James Anderson when James Anderson gives up, has enough, injures his leg, whatever it might be.
Mm.
I think that he is a very, very skilled test match bowler. And I think he's best in that form of the game. The fact that he can come in and score 30 odd like he did tonight in T20 is just another string to his all-rounders cricketing bow. I think he's a superb player. And I think he, on balance, England's fourth best seamer behind Mark Wood.
I think that if Wokes had the personality of Dernbach, he wouldn't be anywhere near the England team.
Do you think it's his will to get better that makes him...
I just think that he is a good team man. He would fit in very well with the All Blacks. He's absolutely not a dickhead. In any way.
You only don't like Jed Dernbach because he's coloured his hair funny. How do you know he's not a big team man?
No. I don't like Dernbach because in Willie I trust. And Willie, of course, was very publicly critical.
That's
of Dernbach
pick a
at
team,
the end
Ross.
Of the,
yes.
Yes.
This is like Twilight, that saga. That's an old reference. Anyway, things move on, don't they?
Things do move on.
I go on, Chris Wokes. I'm very willing to be persuaded.
Well, do you know what? We're going to pick at the saw that is the England Test squad for
yes,
South Africa
absolutely.
After a little light. Jazz.
So, the England Test squad, it threw up a few surprises, which we're going to go through. I'm going to start in a more unusual place, actually. I'm going to say that for some people, having a player like Patel, I mean, Sumit is murder for some people, but I think this charming man is a perfect fit for the England team. Comments, please.
I think it's the most controversial England Test squad of the last 20 years.
That is good. I think, I love Samet. I think it's quite right that he was, after playing excellent innings and looking the part, certainly with the bat, I think it's nice. That's what I'm going to say. I think it's nice, there's a soundbite, that he's retained his place in the squad.
If you don't like Samet, you don't like cricket.
Exactly.
I don't think there's anyone around this weird, uncomfortable little corner of a desk that doesn't like Samet.
Mm.
I understand that, but there was almost a fait accompli. I was listening to some other pundit who knows a lot more than me, and they I actually used it in the wrong context as well, so let's not get too impressed with the use of the fait accompli bit. So they were saying, well, you know, obviously if Moeen's injured, you wouldn't have Adil Rashid in. I mean, and I was like, well, that's the bit of the logic I don't get. I get the bit where you send him to Australia to get ready for the T20.
Mm.
But there was a discussion, I think, on the switch hit, which was saying, you know, because obviously if Moeen was out, you wouldn't have Adil in. And I thought, you wouldn't lose too much on the batting if they were batting at 8.
Mm.
I know Moeen's probably slightly better, but at 8, he's not going to score 150. And then bowling-wise, well, you've got to give the guy a chance. And I think
I don't think I agree with that idea, to be honest. I think if it was, Rashid is ahead of Samet to be the spinner in the team. He's just he's not ahead of him to be the non-playing spinner, if you see what I mean, this winter.
Yeah.
Mm. So I agree with you.
I think it is interesting. I think it says a lot about how much they like Zafar Ansari, is that they'll just take a place saver for Zafar Ansari. Is essentially, he's sort of a similar quality of batsman, plays quite proper strokes, and he's a left arm off spinner. And I think that's who they're looking to bring to the side. Ultimately.
It just shows how unlucky he was to be to get injured on the very day that he was put in the squad, because he had this terrific season. There was a winter ahead, which was obviously going to offer an opportunity for a second spinner, And then he's just been deprived of that. And it's obvious he definitely would have played a test match out there, at least one. And by the looks of things, would have then been taken on to South Africa. So he has been a bit unfortunate, because when is that opportunity of the second spinner slot going to come up? I mean, he's probably going to have to displace someone now rather than to be slotted as an additional
player. Well, I imagine that when they go to, is it India next winter, they will take three spinners total.
Yeah.
Although I'm trying to recall who went with Swan and Panesar in 2012.
Or was Samet?
Samet played as well.
Mm. Interesting, because he played in Sri Lanka that series too, didn't he?
He made way for Root at Nagpur. For Root's debut. Yeah.
Interesting.
I think they'll have no problem dropping Samet for Ansari ultimately.
No,
they'll just sort of.
It's in Samet's hands, isn't it? Actually, the best thing Samet could do would be take any opportunity he gets to score a century to demonstrate that he's amongst the six most talented batsmen in the country.
That's true.
Yeah.
But particularly since there's so many places up for grabs, which leads perfectly, listener, just as we planned, into a discussion of the batting.
Mm.
I assume Samet isn't going to be batting at three. I've got a really, really, really obscure, strange kind of logic around picking Compton in that it's so direct. We keep collapsing with all of these attacking batsmen, so we're going to pick this guy, this stonewaller. This rock of a man. It's kind of so. It's almost so obvious. I can't work out whether it's stupid or clever. Mm. Anyone got a view?
Well, it's like David Steele in 75, isn't it? He's he's being a specialist to take on the quick bowlers, maybe something along those lines. That worked out quite well.
He's a bit more glamorous than David Steele, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
He's comfortable in South Africa.
Very comfortable.
South African heritage. He's played there, etc. Last time I watched him, he's a walking LBW. Something, he also hasn't scored any runs really since he was dropped of note. He's knocked around just under 40, about 40. It's absolutely fine, it's acceptable, it's first division runs. But it's not a sheer weight of runs that screams it must be me. So I think there's an acknowledgement in picking Compton that they made a mistake the first time round under Flower, because there's nothing that's happened in between that you would say particularly changes the picture. I think they've tried a lot of other people who have failed. Compton didn't really.
Well, it shows
it's
kind how
of
much
grass
were,
is greener situation.
I guess it shows how keen they were to not pick Bell, because there wasn't ever such a compelling candidate to replace him. So it seems to have gone more in the direction of, right, we are definitely going to drop Bell. Who is the next in line to replace him? And Compton definitely fulfills that, really, or it certainly needs to be in the squad. But you have to say it's quite a serious decision to say, No, Bell can't go on that tour. I mean, lots of different views on that, and it's exciting to see an opportunity for these guys, but quite striking that, I think.
I actually think it's a bit of a disappointing selection, Nick Compton, for me. I think he's obviously a very good cricketer. I think he was unlucky to be dropped when he was dropped last time out.
Certainly.
But it kind of made sense with Root being an opener, or as we thought at the time, etc., etc., etc. But if England's best player is to bat at three, to have us 10 for 1 and Nick Compton walk to the crease, no one's going to be frightened by that. And a lot has been said about England's new aggressive attacking approach and having impetus and taking onus and kind of leading from the front. And we're going to have Nick Compton number 3. Now, he's not a bad player by any means, but it's a step in the wrong direction. And it might very well work. If he was opening, which I don't think he's going to do, I think it's going to be Alex Hales, I'd be less miffed with the decision. Because then you can have a top quality number 3.
Why is Compton supposed to be 3 and Hales opener when, until early on in the not season, Hales was batting at 3, wasn't he?
That's true, yeah.
So I don't understand why that is a fait accompli.
Yes.
I guess it's possible, isn't it, that they will do that, because they both batted at 3 a lot last year. Mm. But maybe they think, actually, the first in line of those two players has to open.
Yeah.
And they think it's Hales' turn before it's Compton's. I don't know if it's quite...
I think Hales would probably rather bat 3.
I think, yeah.
And probably Compton would probably rather open.
Either way, they're going to be in early.
And it's, never let them do what they want.
We've ignored Gary Balance. Is in fact, Gary Balance going to be 3? He's coming back.
I think Balance is going to bat 3. I mean, I might not be privy to the inner workings of the ECB, but I always felt that we're going to live him out for a series or two and then bring him straight back in, whether whether he wanted that or not. And I feel that's what's going to happen.
Has Barrett scored any runs since he was dropped, really?
Not particularly.
He's scored some runs. For me, I think he should be back at five if he were to come back.
Was he at five for Yorkshire when he went back to Yorkshire?
Yes, he was always in the past.
So the thing with balance, which I found always quite amusing, is obviously he had this extraordinary average of 85 and then he started failing. And every single time you got to a stage where they were going to drop him, somebody would say, well, you can't drop him, he averages 82. Mm. And then the next game he'd score zero. You can't drop him, he averages 71. Mm. And then he gets the next game. They eventually got to 56 before somebody pulled the plug. But I was almost interested to see how far he could keep going.
The fact is that is the nature of averages, what you've described there. An average is something which keeps telling you that this player is still good. And it's what it sounds sort of Orwellian in its ridiculousness, it is fundamentally true.
Yeah.
I do believe that. I also believe that he's fundamentally an excellent player. And I would say, you know, there's such a ridiculous price put on orthodoxy, whereas I think temperament and hand-eye coordination and see-ball, hit-ball, I'd place over those every time. And I think balance will do that.
Yeah, the Gary Balance of Pandora's Box will always have a place in my heart. But I was a little concerned when he was batting against New Zealand that I was watching somebody, you know, blind, shaking a white cane. Like, as in, it looked as if he couldn't see the ball. Mm. So that was pretty fundamental. I know he has it, like the guts, and I think he's got the talent too. But something like specific was happening, and I want to know if it's been addressed.
I think that's actually a very good point, because you talked about the average, and I was one of those people who defended Balance's average. But what was stark about that sort of little inadvertent Freudian thing there, because it was always Mitchell Starc, wasn't it? What was stark about Balance's failure was the manner in which he was getting out and the ease with which they were dismissing him. So it wasn't Adam Lyth who was getting to 10 and then getting dismissed by good deliveries. Admittedly, there was a technical fault there, but Balance had a proper inability to play quick, full pitch bowling, and that was made very, very, very evident. Whereas players in the past who had failed for England had done it in different ways, and it hadn't been endemic of a problem that they had. I don't know whether he's gone away and been able to fix that problem. I don't know whether it would also act as a strength for him. If you carry on bowling full, then maybe he's just going to be able to play you through mid-wicket. But he had an issue. I don't know whether they've been able to fix it. But if they have, he's a supreme player.
All right, let's get to the elephant in the room. Mm. And he's a small ginger elephant. His name is Ian Bell. We've touched upon him already. I wondered today on my commute whether Ian Bell was almost like a Stephen Harmison figure. I know Harmison never made it to 118 caps. But, you know, Harmison is forever framed in 2004 and into five. And Bell, maybe in 2013, another couple of occasions. Supreme talent, only occasionally glimpsed, but enough to sort of cement a reputation. But a bit like Harmison towards the end, time to go. That was a kind of way of thinking about it that I could get my head around. Mm-hmm. My other way of thinking about it was he's better than anyone else that they've selected to potentially take his place. He's better than Compton and Balance and such like. And it was only a matter of time, class tells, which is the KP view of things, very vocal on this subject.
I come back to actually KP, it was what I said on the show before. When KP was dropped, he was effectively dropped for Balance, who scored more runs on coming into the side than KP ever could have. I mean, he averaged over 50. Watching KP bat in his final moments in the side, he was never going to do that. And Balance did exactly that. I just think whoever comes into the side, I do believe that they will score more runs than Ian Bell. And that is not saying that Ian Bell isn't a quality batsman, hasn't been one, and isn't completely terrific, and might top score in Division 1 for Warwickshire, for all we know.
If he does play county cricket, he will absolutely murder
them. He will murder them, and I would like to see him do that. In a lot of ways, there's not enough flow between being dropped and then coming back into the England side. People believe in keeping your place throughout absolutely everything.
Bell has been a beneficiary of, let's not deny it. Overall, he's justified it, hasn't he? You're right to say that his overall record does speak of a small amount of underachievement, I would say, or possibly more significant amount of underachievement. But it's pretty harsh to say, you haven't done well enough because you could have done so much better. Whereas, Paul Collingwood, well done for having done what you did when, you know, you should have been rubbish. And that's not that fair on Ian Bell. The truth is he's been a really good test batsman. Mm. And unless there's something that they've really seen that he can't do it anymore, I would absolutely have stuck with him.
I don't think it's the end for Ian Bell.
No, I don't.
Great soundbite. Yeah. Can I do a quick little poll? Who would have taken Bell to South Africa? Hands up.
That's a good visual.
It's a good visual one.
Hands up.
Just not me.
Okay, listener, three of the four. Ross would not have taken Bell to South Africa. And then finally, for the listener, hands up those who think Bell will play again for England in the test team.
All of us.
All of us. Intéressant. Oui, oui.
Just to throw a kind of soundbite in there, I think it's very well said that you shouldn't really judge him in terms of his ability versus achievement. But I think all you needed with Ian Bell to know that he should have been dropped was his name and the numbers next to them, because they just weren't going up very quick.
Jazz. Kent, your features editor for All Out Cricket magazine. It's a reputable magazine. You must be delighted to be associated with it. Yeah. Do update us on the next issue. I'm excited to hear what you have in store.
It's out this week on Thursday, brand new magazine. And the main feature and the cover story is England's greatest ever away wins. So the Test match victories, best Test match victories, relived by the people involved, retold by those who loved watching it and still cry about them secretly.
I've got a soft spot in my heart for those victories that came in the midst of defeat, maybe series defeats, but just that one win in the middle.
Couple of them in there.
Yeah, well, I bet they're right. England haven't won another away series, strictly, any other way. Does anyone feel that the, I don't know, the reputation of the podcast, the ability of people to trust in the content is undermined by the fact that we're not sponsored by Squarespace.
I believe that, yeah.
MailChimp.
Yeah, I'm concerned. Nor Me Undies.
Yeah, or NatureBox. Come on, NatureBox.
What are you doing, NatureBox?
We can flog some fruit-based snacks.
But we are absolutely delighted to be associated with the Erstwhile magazine, All Out Cricket magazine, yes. Erstwhile.
Yes. I actually know. What's Erstwhile?
It's a word that you throw into sentences.
Just to put
it in former. It's the former magazine.
There we go. I always thought Erstwhile was sort of like
some sort of linguistic placebo.
I just thought it was space. I didn't realise it meant something.
Absolutely brilliant.
You might have been saying.
This erstwhile relationship is...
I've been talking about my erstwhile wife to colleagues for a while now. And on that note of gentle hilarity and chuckling, we'll fade away, listener. And you can enjoy some jazz. You can contact us.
You've missed the moment to get out, haven't you?
At Cricket Podblast or at All Out Cricket.
Yeah. There we go. Well, those are specifics. I was going to take a more general approach, the internet post fax pager.
Tweet us.